Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. So happy to be back here. Thank you so much for being here with us, for making it possible. And a very happy Monday afternoon or Monday evening or Tuesday morning, depending on where you are around the world. We're very, very grateful that you take this time with us. And we got a really good Monday for you. This is day by day here in the United States, and I do think this will have effects all around the world. We are one day closer to this Supreme Court decision on the Roe versus Wade earlier Supreme Court decision, and we're hoping for good things. But without question, we're going to be needing to be prepared to answer questions, to answer objections, to defend life, in other words, as it moves from the courts into the more political arena. So we got a really good pro-life show for you today. Second hour, Stephanie Gray Connors, the mother of a brand new baby, is going to be here with us. She's back out doing speaking, and you know she's one of the great pro-life voices. As a matter of fact, we have two of the best pro-life speakers in the world on the show today. She's got a new book about in vitro fertilization. So second hour, we're going to talk to her about in vitro fertilization. If this is something that you have been considering or that you want to talk to other people about, or you want to be able to talk to your, you know, RCIA classes about, the perfect hour. So hang out for Stephanie's second hour. We'll talk about in vitro fertilization from the Catholic perspective. This hour, persuasive pro-life, just a general persuasive pro-life. You got pro-life questions? This hour is for you. 888-318-7884. And if you're going to do persuasive pro-life, who do you get? You get the great Trent Horn. Hi, Trent Horn.
Hello, Cy Kellett.
Thanks for being here with us.
Of course.
Yeah. Are you happy that I put you in the same category with Stephanie Gray Connors as two of the great Catholic defenders of life?
Well, I am humbled to be in that spot with Stephanie. We often joke how we will recommend each other if we're unable to do an event.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I interviewed her once, and she meant to say that I was the male version of her, but I think she said I was the female version of her, and I failed to note that and correct it, much to my chagrin.
Oh, later. Don't you love that? And then it went out, and now You've got Stephanie Gray Connors saying you're the female version of her.
The female version of her. Yeah. So. What are you going to do, right? No, she's great. And
just release it in California.
Well, right.
Don't release it anywhere else.
Yeah, I had it, had her, I should say, on my show recently to talk about her book, Conceived by Science, talking about IVF, because I think a lot of Catholics feel like they can talk about abortion, but they're not sure how to talk about IVF.
Right.
Steph's book is really good on that subject.
Yeah, and she can really talk about it. All right, so 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Trent mentioned his podcast. It's called Council of Trent. It's very, very popular, and you can get it at trenthornpodcast.com. What have you been doing over at trenthornpodcast.com lately? What's been dropping?
Oh.
Other than Stephanie Gray Connors.
Lots of good stuff. Well, I just wrapped up today posting. I've kind of done a three-part series in the Kalam cosmological argument.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I've really gone through the argument. I rebutted a documentary going against this argument that whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, so it has a cause. So I covered that in two rebuttals. And then I had a dialogue with one of the premier critics of the argument, a philosopher named Alex Malpass. And he and I had a good chat about that, about a two-hour-long conversation today, because I'm really big in having conversations with people who disagree with me. I'll do it with philosophers, apologists from other faith traditions. I'll be doing a debate on the resurrection tomorrow. That'll air on my podcast next Monday. So I enjoy doing that. That's why I enjoy people, especially if they have different perspectives on abortion, they can feel free to call in here. So,
is this the philosopher who disagrees with you, Malpass, you said?
Yes.
Is he an atheist philosopher or a believing philosopher?
I believe he's an atheist.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, there are Christians. Jimmy Akin is one who does not believe the Kalam cosmological argument is sound. I disagree with Jimmy on that. So maybe in the future, he and I will have a chat about that.
Jimmy believes it's true.
I misspoke. Jimmy believes the Kalam cosmological argument is a sound argument if you're using things like scientific evidence for the beginning of the universe. He does not think the arguments from reason or philosophy that try to show that the universe is a finite past are successful. That's where he and I would part ways.
But now Thomas Aquinas didn't make that argument, because he thought it was conceivable that God could have made a creation with an infinite past.
That's correct. And now I would hold the view more that St. Bonaventure had, which is that not even God could create a beginningless past, because that would entail contradictions, and God doesn't make contradictions. That should be a fun subject for another show. If we get enough people who want to call in about Kalam, I don't know.
Have you and Jimmy do it together? That would be very good. That'd be very interesting.
Or awkward.
Or awkward. Well, yeah.
You never know. Or we get to talk, and then both of us could take audience Q&A. Would be fun. So, but today I want to talk with people. Agree, disagree, wherever you're at on abortion, I'm happy to answer your questions or chat with you about it. So,
up first is Tom in New Jersey, and if I'm remembering right, we've speak with Tom in New Jersey rather regularly. Do I have the right person, Trent? Do you happen to remember?
Yes, I think Tom gets a free sandwich now.
For five calls. I thought it was after five.
Get the punch card out, and I'm excited. Right.
Congratulations on your free sandwich, Tom. You got a question for Trent?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that introduction. And so, yeah, Trent, you, along with Stephanie Gray and others, will argue that the reason why a woman should be legally obligated to sustain the life of her fetus in the womb, but a parent should not be legally obligated to give bone marrow to their children or to anyone else, is because a woman's uterus is for sustaining the life of the child, but your bone marrow is not for sustaining the life of someone else. And I think that makes sense. But a critic might ask in response, okay, why does the fact that a woman's uterus is for sustaining the fetus mean that she should be legally obliged to use it this way? Because you could say one of the purposes of a woman's vagina is to have a man's member placed inside of it, but it does not follow that she should be legally obliged to allow a man to do that simply because her body part is for the man in that respect. So how would you respond to that?
Yeah, I think I would say that there's key differences between these cases. Just because something would be natural doesn't necessarily mean that it is obligatory. My stomach is for eating, but it doesn't mean I have to eat any kind of food that is offered to me. So I think we have the difference between the two cases would arise looking at it in that way. I think also we should try to back up a little bit to see what is the argument saying about the unborn child and his particular rights. Because one could argue that, and I'm going to try to keep this as PG as possible, you could say that female reproductive organs, I guess, let me try, I'll spitball here and see what I can do. For a man who is capable of marriage, we could say that other women's bodies are made for the act of marriage, but there is no particular female body that was made just for him. I don't believe in soulmates or things like that, and the church doesn't believe in anything like that. So I think right there, you couldn't say that a man has a right to a particular woman's body just in virtue of him being a man and them being a woman, because his body might be made for complementarity with any woman, but not necessarily any particular woman. However, that would change upon marriage. Upon contracting marriage, we talk about this in moral theology manuals. It gets a bad rap sometimes with this idea. Well, Paul mentions it, like the marital debt. That husbands and wives, their bodies are made for each other in the sense they become for each other through the act of marriage. And so there, one can argue that there is a obligation that exists between men and women to offer their bodies to one another in marriage. That doesn't mean you can just demand that, or, you know, there's a whole lot of other things that kind of go into that. But the analogy you give, it's interesting there. I think I would say, yeah, one man's body, other women in general are ordered towards the marital act with him, but not any particular woman. That changes upon consent to matrimony, to marriage. There you have a man and a woman who are really literally made for each other. And there is an obligation that actually does arise between the two of them. So I think then when we go back to pregnancy, it seems clear to me the uterus is not just for any unborn child necessarily. I think a very strong case can be made that the a woman's uterus exists for the children she conceives. And so now this can get into, of course, very, very strange cases. What if she's implanted with an embryo that isn't hers? I would still say she has an obligation there, but that will take us too far afield what we're talking about today. But I do think a very strong case is going to be made that the uterus exists for the children that she conceived. Because when that child comes into existence, it's not like he just could look around metaphorically and say, oh, which I could have any of these moms out here. No, 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 no. He is made for a particular woman's uterus. A particular woman's uterus was designed for him. And so I don't think the analogy between a man and his capabilities of the marital act are making him complemented to any particular woman. I don't think the analogies would hold in both the cases. That there the child is conceived, comes into existence, he is ordered towards a particular organ, that woman's uterus to sustain him, and vice versa. So I hope that that is helpful for you. And yeah, definitely call back in, Tom. It's always helpful. And I tried very hard to keep it all very PG to discuss. I think I understand the objection that is raised, but I had fun talking around that a little bit. So thanks for calling.
And we have to take our break, Tom. So thank you very much. As before I go to the break, however, we have some books I'd like to encourage you to consider picking up for your Lenten reading. And a brand new book that just came out is just perfect for your Lenten reading. It's called These 12, The Gospel Through the Apostles' Eyes. Just follow the lives of the apostles, be inspired by the lives of the apostles, and see Jesus through the eyes of the apostles who loved him. You can get that over at shop.catholic.com. They got a great price on it. We're already getting great feedback on it. JPL says, I just finished reading These 12 last night, and I'm tempted to start reading it again. These 12 is interesting, informative, inspirational. These 12 is a book all should read. It's from the really incomparable Rod Bennett. It's called These 12, The Gospel Through the Apostles' Eyes. Maybe consider that for your Lenten reading. Head on over and get it at shop.catholic.com.
Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn is coming right back.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
One of the reasons we should go to Mass is because it is the food of the saints that we receive. And for the saints, they understood rightly that the time after Holy Communion, that those moments are the most precious moments of our lives.
The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, live from the EWTN Chapel, every morning, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Persuasive pro-life this hour. Would you like a little help being more persuasive in your pro-life arguments? Are there pro-life arguments that you are not persuaded of? You'd like a little help in thinking them through, or you'd like the challenge of thinking them through with Trent? 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Totally unrelated to you, Trent. I was reading, somebody asked a question on Reddit. It was about this got an unbeliever making some claims about the Gospels, and somebody goes, like, who's a good apologist to respond to these things? And then all these people started piling on, going, Trent Horn, you should hear this guy, Trent Horn. And I was like, man, Trent's on the internet under 10
I'm
different
on Reddit.
Names, that's, promoting that's a, himself again, you know?
Like, it gets exhausting, all those sock puppet accounts. Yeah, but
I know a guy
it.
Named Trent Horn. And then the person who wrote it's named Bent Born or something like that. That's your fake identity.
Rent Torn.
888-318-7884, the number. Persuasive Pro-Life. If you've got a pro-life question, you're welcome to call Trent Horn. Damien in Austin, Texas, watching on YouTube. You are up next, Damien. Please go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hi, Trent. Hi, Cy again.
Hi, Damien.
My point with good shot again with the trash can there.
Can you tell when I made it? Like
Yeah, good. You're very excited.
I just crumple up the old ad and I see if I can make the shot, and I made it. I made a hook shot. Thank you very much.
Yes, you did. So my point with the abortion discussion here is that it seems like no one discusses the point that the entire abortion issue is 100% the man's fault. The woman can consent to having sexual intercourse with a guy, but he doesn't have to impregnate her in the process. I give the example, it's like you go rock climbing and you choose to go rock climbing as someone who doesn't want to bring rock climbing safety gear. Okay, fine. But when the woman's halfway up the rock cliff, then the guy decides to shove her off, causing the natural process of her falling and breaking her arm.
Okay.
He kicks off the natural process of pregnancy.
Yeah.
Not her.
Okay. I was worried you were going to get more graphic, but I dig what you're saying. So do you see the metaphor he's using there, Trent?
Kind of. You're trying to say that men are the only ones who are responsible for the existence of an unborn child. That women are not responsible. I think most women would say, well, if I have sexual relations with a man and I allow him to complete that act while we are in, and once again, I'm going to try to keep it all PG here for our listeners, mm-hmm. and I allow him to complete that act while we are coupled, if you will, I think most women would say, I knew that this could result in a baby, so I'm responsible for, especially, you know, in the vast, vast majority of cases, the woman consents to beginning the act and allowing it to reach its culmination. So how would she not be responsible?
You changed my scenario. My scenario was the one where she's consenting to this sexual act with the man, but she's not consenting to him impregnating her as a result. So there's other ways of not shoving her off the cliff to go rock climbing. He's the one actually kicking off the natural process that she can't control. She can't control gravity and falling and breaking her arm after he shoves her off the cliff.
But here's where I think you've misunderstood here a little bit. You can't consent to a consequence. You consent to an action. And in consenting to an action, you have accepted the consequences of the act. So, like, I'm trying to understand, like, with your analogy, like, him throwing her off of the cliff, are you saying, like, she can't control which sperm fertilizes the egg? I'm having a hard time following this.
Well, I don't want to lead. I just want to be careful about but are you talking about an act of deception? I just want to be careful about how graphic we get. But are you talking about an act of deception?
There are multiple, engaging in sexual intercourse with someone, there's multiple different ways you can do that. And there's also multiple different ways you can discuss with your partner about what you can see, consent and not consent to. If the man agrees to all of that and then impregnates her when she had a discussion with him going, I'm fine with doing everything you want to do. I just don't want to be don't impregnate me. And he decides to not go with her wishes and then impregnates her. That is the scenario I'm talking about.
That's when you say don't, okay, when you say don't impregnate, because it sounds like me, you could be saying that, you know, use contraception, do coitus interruptus, whatever it may be. The problem I have here is that the woman is consenting to an act that is known for creating children, and the man is doing that too. So I agree with you that it's wrong to say that women are the only ones responsible for the creation of children. Many times we don't talk about the man, and we should do that. But I think it's very clear that when both a man and a woman consent to the act, even if they do things like use birth control or try coitus interruptus, those have known failure rates that are involved with those acts. That's no different than consenting to driving drunk. And even if you play the radio loud and roll down the window and do everything you can to not crash, you still have, you know, engaged in the activity. So I would say that I don't find this analogy very persuasive. It'd be like if a woman told a man, hey, I'm going to pay you to bury toxic waste in my backyard, but don't get my children sick. Well, no. And, you know, no matter what safeguards you take, you've taken a risk in doing something that could hurt the children. Once again, you consent to actions, not necessarily consequences. So I would say both the man and the woman have an obligation to the unborn child. The man has an obligation in virtue of being, he has an obligation to support the woman and child financially, and the mother has an obligation to sustain the child through the organ that is designed to keep the child alive, just like she would have a natural obligation to breastfeed a child, her child, if that is the only way to keep that child alive. So I'm not really convinced by that argument. I think that they're both equally responsible. If you choose to engage in the marital act, you have engaged in an act that is ordered towards the ends of creating children. You have obligations towards those children. I think that's a very sound moral intuition, and it applies equally to men and women. But thanks for the thought experiment, Damien. It was certainly interesting.
Both calls coming, just requiring a delicacy of speech today. So I would just remind our callers, but I'm not, the callers have been fine, but let's just be careful because little ears are listening. So just say it in the way you'd say it if you were their mom and dad. Damien, thanks very, very much again for the call. Jake in Buffalo, New York is up next. Persuasive Pro-Life this hour with Trent Horn. Jake's listening on 101.7 FM. Jake, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hello. Okay, so I'm glad you just reminded everyone of child's ears. So Jeremiah, I believe it's 1 verse 5, talks about, I had a plan for you, I called you by name. I think I have that verse right.
It's right after Jeremiah was a bullfrog. That's right. I'm
no,
just kidding.
That's come on. Now. Yeah. Jeremiah was a bullfrog. As many people think it's in the Bible, but that is not in the Bible. That is Three Dog Night.
So yeah, Jeremiah 1:5 right. says this before we continue. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations.
Okay. So my question is, you had just, I normally try to, I usually feel like I have all my bases covered. I told the screener that, but then you said a few minutes ago, there's no such thing as soulmates. Now I might be a romantic, but that's not what this call is about. It's not about me
sure.
believing in soulmates. I guess it's more about if God has a plan for you. And you are, it sounds like, you know, with that Jeremiah verse that you are intended to live. So if, pardon my dog, he hates the car. We're sitting in my driveway. So
that's fine.
My question is like, when you're talking about situations, this is a problem you hear all the time.
I feel so bad for the dog. I'm sorry.
The dog is fine. He's sitting in the back seat yawning because he just hates the car.
Right.
So I will get him out of the car and continue talking. But,
sorry.
So the question is, in instances of the R word, I'll say, which is a large argument for the pro-abortion side, and I understand it's a very sensitive issue. But when that happens, or say a young child becomes pregnant, where does the plan for you call, you know?
God's plan come in. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I would say here is we have to understand that what God is saying in Jeremiah 1:5, this is a specific thing towards Jeremiah as a prophet, saying that God, you know, predestined. He knew that Jeremiah would be a prophet. This is not some random thing Jeremiah did, but Jeremiah also freely took part in it. Be careful about how we apply that particular verse to everybody. It's talking about God's plan for us. And so I would recommend paragraph 600 of the Catechism, which says, "To God, all moments of time are present in their immediacy. When, therefore, he establishes his eternal plan of predestination, he includes in it each person's free response to his grace." So what that means is that God knows what is going to happen. He has a plan for creation. He has a plan for us, but it doesn't mean that the plan is carried out by God directing all of us like we're little puppets. God takes into account in the plan he makes how each of us will freely respond to his grace. So in taking that into account, like if someone comes into existence through rape, for example, it doesn't mean that God positively willed that an act of evil would occur like rape. It reminds me in Genesis chapter 50, when Joseph, after being sold into slavery by his brothers, goes to Egypt, becomes a leader there, saves his family from starvation. Genesis 50, he says, "What you meant for evil, God meant for good, for the salvation of many people." God can take any evil we freely choose and bring even greater goods from it.
Thanks very much, Jake. Take the dog for a walk. It's a wild Catholic Answers today. Graphic descriptions of things we don't usually graphically describe. Howling dogs. Right back with more. Trent Horn.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll discuss Fat Tuesday traditions and look at dust and ashes in the Bible with Steve Ray as we prepare to enter into Lent. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Really fantastic pro-life Monday here. Second hour, Stephanie Gray Connors, who many people do refer to as Stephanie Gray, as one of our earlier callers did, because she was doing this long before she was married. But now Stephanie Gray Connors, and we're going to talk about in vitro fertilization, something that baffles and confuses many people. And particularly, why is there any moral opposition to in vitro fertilization? Why would anyone have a moral objection to something that brings beautiful, beautiful babies into the world? And we will talk about that with Stephanie Gray Connors the second hour. This hour, Trent Horn, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. And for one reason or another, technical or otherwise, we have cleared all the phone lines. It's perfect time to call if you've been wanting to call and ask Trent something, because for whatever reason, was it me? I don't know. Somebody hung up on everybody. 888-318-7884. We'll never know who it was. There's no possible way to ever know who it was, but all the lines are open. 888-318-7884. I want to ask you about something that I thought I might ask you about at the beginning of the show, but now that I have a minute, if I may, ask you about it.
Sure.
There's a Senate bill that has been coming up today. Have you been following this? It's Senate Bill 1975, and it has to do with trying to override all... Like essentially what happened in the Roe versus Wade decision is every single state law got thrown out and everything got federalized as far as abortion goes. And so
you got to be careful with that. The judiciary prevented the legislatures of the states from restricting abortion in any meaningful way.
Yes. But now that's what, so they're saying, well, the court's going to overturn that. So now let's have, we'll just do it in the Congress.
Right.
Have you heard about that?
Oh, yeah. This is something they've tried to do for a while. And they may get more motivation if Roe versus Wade is significantly undermined this summer. We don't know exactly what will happen. But yeah, I'm praying that it won't. I think it would require, I don't know if there are enough votes in the Senate or even the House, frankly, to be able to accomplish that. I do think, though, it's going to be a big, it's interesting. It will be a real big test of some people who have said, oh, it doesn't matter if a Catholic politician is pro-choice because they can't do anything anyways. I've heard that yarn for a long time from some certain people online saying it doesn't matter really if you vote for a pro-life, if a Catholic politician is pro-life or pro-choice because they can't do anything anyways, was right. The argument that it's the Supreme Court and they're not going to be able to change anything and it doesn't matter. Well, it'll be interesting to me if it does come to that, and then I would say, well, what, you know, now suddenly we have an opportunity where Catholic politicians in the Congress and our Catholic president do have the opportunity to say whether we will protect unborn lives or not, specifically just on that issue. And so we'll see. So I think it'll lay to rest what they were saying, that no, this really was important. It was certainly an important thing to discuss. And then if it does come to that, and yeah, I'm just going to say it. I would say, yeah, a Catholic politician who votes for a federal codifying of Roe v. Wade, if a bishop does not withhold communion from them, they're a joke. They would be an absolute joke and a disgrace to the church. If after, you know, because you can make all kinds of excuses you want. You can make all kinds of excuses. Oh, they're not materially cooperative. Oh, this, oh, that. If they vote specifically just to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law,
right,
and then you say there's nothing wrong with them receiving our Lord and Savior, you're a disgrace to the Catholic Church. You should step down. Any bishop or prelate who says that, I'll go on record.
I hadn't thought about that.
It's
striking that if the Supreme Court strikes down Roe versus Wade, it's a real time of deciding for Catholic politicians because you cannot vote for this. You cannot directly vote for this. That would be the same in a moral sense of providing any other direct support to abortion. I mean, in the right. moral sense, you might as well be driving the person there. You might as well be paying
for
it.
How would that be different from voting for a law that says the states cannot ban lynching? The states cannot ban marital rape. Yeah. It would be no different. And so that's for me, that will be a real test. If it comes down to that, where people in the Congress and the president, their vote will decide.
Yeah.
And if they're going to vote directly for this, and if you think they should still be held in good standing as Catholics and receive the Eucharist and be treated like anybody else, it'll show really if you put party before principle and before faith,
yeah,
frankly.
And I think is going to happen too, Trent, is and I know many people don't believe this is even possible, but it is. Political changes happen all the time. I think that there are many in the Democratic Party who are going to return to their pro-life roots. There's always been a pro-life, pro-worker party, and they forgot both of those things. And I think you're going to see an actual shift where, and I hope so. I mean, I hope that's the case.
Well, I pray that pro-choice individuals in both of the major parties will reconsider their views, because there's a fair, I mean, there are pro-life Democrats, there are pro-choice Republicans. I want anybody who supports legal abortion to reconsider their view.
Yeah.
But I think if the court does allow states to have greater flexibility and this ends up before the Congress, I think especially Catholic politicians should be held accountable on how they would vote for something like that.
Yeah.
It'd be unconscionable.
Maybe we'll be surprised by some. I'm sure by some politicians disappointed by them. And we're pretty used to being disappointed as pro-life people. But maybe also pleasantly surprised by some.
Yeah, right.
Lynn, I have a magic power today. I just said Lynn's name, and she hung up the phone. So I apologize, Lynn. The number is 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Persuasive Pro-Life on this Monday with Trent Horn, our guest, 888-318-7884. You got any other pro-life news that's out there, Trent, like things that you're tracking? Because in a certain way, you seemed kind of almost like not really that interested in that one because it doesn't seem realistic that they're going to pass it.
Oh, you mean the
Senate one?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to require a lot, and I think that there are still enough votes in the Senate and possibly the House as well for it to not go forward. But once again, that does show, yeah, your voting for people who don't think some people are people has consequences.
All right, Michael in Texas. Oh, I said his name. He didn't hang up, so I think we might be going to get a call on the line. Michael in Texas, watching on YouTube. You are next. Go ahead with your... Oh, there he is. Okay, good. Go ahead.
Yep, there. I'm here. I would just like to say that men need to have more attention towards them after they realize that, after an abortion, because, I went to Rachel's Vineyard, and I feel much better about myself, but I still would love to be able to hug my child, which I miss dearly.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
In the passing and the comments, men are mentioned almost like in passing. And,
right.
I
think that's comment. So important what you just said, Trent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I firmly agree with you. There is actually an article on the website for the USCCB. The article is called The Hollow Men, Male Grief and Trauma Following Abortion. So I definitely recommend that for our readers. I remember a while ago, as our caller alluded to, Rachel's Vineyard and other post-abortive services for women oftentimes have resources for men as well. I remember there being a group that I was familiar with many years ago called Fathers Forever. There might still be some chapters out there here or there that also is related to this. So men, knowing that they've engaged in an act that brought a child into existence and were helpless to be, and in many cases, sometimes they cooperated with the abortion, other times they were completely helpless and unable to save their child. That can be very weighty upon a man's soul, and they need to seek out healing just as women seek out healing who've been involved in abortions. So, definitely recommend it. Definitely check out that resource for our listeners, The Hollow Men at USCCB on their pro-life activities section of their website. But thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with us. And I'll ask our listeners to definitely pray for Michael, what he's going through.
Indeed. And it just seems part of the whole media regime of ignoring the true stories of abortion and how many men are devastated because of what has happened to their children, grandparents as well, brothers and sisters. I mean, the devastation is profound and all over. And the only way we can keep going like this is if we ignore it. And so God bless you, Michael, for helping us to not ignore it. We do have to take a break. As Trent said, we'll be right back with more Persuasive Pro-Life, Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
He was a scholar, a preacher, a Capuchin Franciscan, and a defender of Christendom.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Lawrence of Brindisi was one of the most respected preachers in the 17th century, but he also helped raise an army against the Ottoman Turks when they invaded Hungary in 1601. He led the troops to victory against the Turks, carrying only a crucifix. He was declared a Doctor of the Church in 1959.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Two hours of great pro-life conversation today. Trent Horn is our guest. Are you handicapping at all whether or not they're going to overturn Roe versus Wade, Trent? Or are you just patiently waiting and see what happens?
I am just waiting. Well, it's interesting. What I'm working on now is I am revising my book, Persuasive Pro-Life.
Oh, you are?
I've been given the green light to do a second edition of the book. So, very excited. It's going to be revised, updated, expanded. Though my goal is actually, I've condensed sections and added more and updated a lot of outdated information, because the book's almost 10 years old, to make it a little bit shorter, but have more content in it. So I'm super excited about that. So I'm going to be working on all of that. I think, honestly, what I'll probably do is complete the book here probably in the next month or so, complete the edits, send them into revision. I'm going to leave half a page blank, and then I'd love to have the book ready to go, and I'll fill in that half of the page in June when Dobbs comes out, and then get it off. That would be great if we could we could do that.
Yeah.
So I'm working on that now. I'm a little bit behind the eight ball because I've had debates and dialogues. I got a lot of stuff going on, Si, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, I know. You're the hardest working man in Catholic radio, but somehow you do it, Trent. So
sure, I'm trying to keep it going, but I'm really excited about that. And I've got other books I'm working on as well. But this is one I think has helped a lot of people. And I think, honestly, the revision, I think it's going to make it more readable, more accessible. It's nice because now that this is my second book. And
you've progressed as a writer since then.
Well, yeah, I wrote seven books after this, so now I think I've learned a lot, and I think I could really spruce it up, and especially if I could shorten it a bit, so we could do like a $3 bulk deal to get it to as many people as
wonderful.
Possible.
Oh, wonderful! Yeah, use all those lessons you learned from writing Things the Saints Never Said, and put that and make, you know, you've gained more experience. In other words, so put
that's
it to
right.
Use.
Things the Saints Never Said: Abortion isn't a big deal. Like I could fill the whole book. I could do a gigantic book of things the Saints never said.
Stan in Georgia's next, listening on the 911 for your soul, 91.1 FM. Stan, go ahead with your question for Trent.
Oh, hi. Appreciate you taking my call. Before I get to my question, I just want to tell Trent I appreciate his book, Made This Way. I'm a catechist, and I teach the confirmation class section on sexuality and morality, and that book has been really helpful. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Here's my question. I've had a career in emergency medicine, and I'm kind of pre-tired now, mostly doing urgent care. But I've always gone by the rule that was, I don't hear it talked about much, put out by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops several years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago, about if a rape victim comes to you and it's within 48 hours of coitus and they are not pregnant, it is permissible in light of, you know, mercy for the victim to offer emergency contraception.
Do you have to?
I just wondered.
Let me just clarify something, Stan, and then I'll let Trent answer. Do you have to inquire about ovulation?
Well, if it's within 48 hours, you know, a lot of times they can't prove that it actually happened.
Trent?
There was some program, I think, on Murphy Brown that shows how long ago this was. And they had a witness, a Catholic doctor, saying, "Oh no, we can't do that," and it really made the church look like a ghoul.
Oh yeah,
like, oh, there's no mercy for the victim. And this sister was giving this talk at that Benedictine College in Illinois. I just happened to be there, and she brought to light this teaching of the bishops and trying to get, you know, CBS to retract, you know, the way they made the church look under that kind of circumstance.
They never retract sitcoms.
Is that still the rule? I mean, I'm gone by that. I never hear it talked about.
Well, yeah. So the current, I'm very, very certain that the current edition of what is called the Ethical and Religious Directives for Catholic Healthcare Providers, this is the paragraph, I think it's paragraph 36, that says this: compassionate and understanding care should be given to a person who is the victim of sexual assault. Healthcare providers should cooperate with law enforcement officials and offer the person psychological and spiritual support, as well as accurate medical information. A female who has been raped should be able to defend herself against a potential conception from the sexual assault. If after appropriate testing, there is no evidence conception has occurred already, she may be treated with medications that would prevent ovulation, sperm capacitation, or fertilization. It is not permissible, however, to initiate or recommend treatments to have as their purpose or direct effect removal, destruction, or interference with implantation of a fertilized ovum, or I would say embryo. So I think I have here a white paper that was related to this. Oh, this is from a Westchester Institute paper called Emergency Contraceptives and Catholic Healthcare. It says, the absence of consent in a sexual assault morally renders the prevention of fertilization an act of self-defense rather than a contraceptive act. So we wouldn't call it contraception. Essentially, the woman is defending herself against the sperm that are invading her body. Now, it says if after appropriate testing is done, I'm not sure what that particularly refers to. You wouldn't have to have absolute certainty that implantation has not occurred or fertilization hasn't occurred yet, but you just have to have moral certainty. So if it's something that happened shortly within, especially within 24 hours, even 48 hours, you could still have a lot of certainty that fertilization hasn't happened yet. But also you could do a questionnaire or survey asking about last menstrual periods, ovulation, things like that, to get a general, at least moral certainty that you're within a window or be appropriate to administer these medications whose purpose is to prevent the rapist's attack from continuing. For our listeners who want more on that, I would definitely recommend the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Their website is ncbcenter.org, and they can go into more detail about what healthcare providers should and shouldn't do in these circumstances.
Okay, Stan.
But thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. I find that conversation helpful in debunking. It's fascinating to me that it was a sitcom, Murphy Brown, that did that, because this kind of constant cynical humor that we have now, it really does divorce people from the truth. But what I was getting at, Trent, was that this kind of debunks a common, you would almost call it a meme, I guess, that this is all about control of women. The point is that it's not all about control of women. In a situation like this, the point is to empower and help the woman. But the only complicating factor is there a baby present? That's the only complicating factor. If there is no baby present, then all kinds of means can be used to protect the mother from the sperm of an attacker.
Right. Absolutely. We believe in the intrinsic dignity of every human person, mother, child, even the rapists. We pray for their repentance. We believe that justice should be served so that they're held accountable for their crimes. We want to respect the dignity of every single person, and we treat people accordingly. And that means for an unborn child, we don't kill them because of the circumstances of their conception. And this is a good segue into next hour, that also, how you came into existence, a child is a good. It doesn't mean that the way they came into existence is always going to be good, because you're going to talk with Stephanie about IVF later, and that'll parallel what we're discussing here.
Indeed, that is exactly right. So I don't know. I just think these easy memes are really. It makes people feel smart.
Well, they misunderstand what the church teaches.
Yeah.
If it's trying to say, or they don't understand fine points on these issues and other things like that.
If I may, Trent, because it was, again, with the phones, we're still awaiting more calls. And you can call. We can get you on with Trent if you call right now, 888-3187-884. Reading an article in The New Yorker last week in which the author is very concerned about the Roe versus Wade possibility being overturned because he says then some states will pass what are called personhood laws, which means you would classify the person, the unborn child as a legal person, which there's great debate even among very pro-life people about whether that's actually true under the Constitution. But here's the problem that he posed, this writer, was in some places in Central America, in some countries in Central America, and in some states in the United States, women who have had miscarriages have been prosecuted and they've been innocent. I don't believe you could be overzealous in the defense of life, but I do think you can be overzealous in thinking that you can control everything, and that actually could be quite horrible to take a natural process like miscarriage and criminalize it.
Well, let me make an analogy, Sai. Okay. What would you think of this argument? We shouldn't say that infants, if you say infants are persons, some infants have died naturally from SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. They have died from trauma to the brain through some kind of congenital defect that looks identical to shaken baby syndrome. Because of this, some mothers and fathers have been falsely arrested and falsely imprisoned for the deaths of their infants, even though they're completely innocent, they didn't do anything wrong. So clearly, to prevent that, we should say infants are not persons and it's not immoral to kill them. Now, what do you think of that argument?
Yeah, I think that that's a good argument, but it has, but all of that depends on prudence, and so we have to teach that prudence. Like, as pro-life people, we have to teach that prudence. Like, don't even risk turning natural miscarriage into something that could be so much worse because you're investigating things that really should not be investigated.
And that's going to come down to prosecutors and their discretion when it comes to bringing charges against individuals, because, you know, there are cases where it's very clear, a mother who has chosen to use illegal drugs and places her baby at great risk and has harmed her child, or fathers who have placed mothers in this situation to cause this to happen, we would think they need to be held accountable. But you're right. Miscarriage is something that's very common. You can't always find a cause or something like that. So recognizing the personhood of the unborn, it doesn't mean that recognizing their personhood does not mean that you have an unjust legal system that will follow. Because you can have an unjust legal system based on any recognition of someone's personhood. It'll be up to us to use prudence and foresight in making determinations about when parents are held responsible for how they treat their children, born or unborn. So I wouldn't let that be too concerning. I would also say that I think that most states that would make abortion illegal would follow previous laws prior to Roe or laws that have been successful, like heartbeat bills, like bills that outlaw abortion after a detectable heartbeat is found. And there you have nothing that relates to contraception, nothing that relates to anything like that. I think that most states, that because those are the kind of laws that we have been seeing that have gotten the most support in state legislatures. So from a practical perspective, I don't see it coming up that much, really.
But in a perfectly just system, there are people who will get away with, so to speak, abortion. You're not going to be
people
perfect.
Get away with every crime.
Yeah. Okay. That, so
we our system is designed. Our system is designed for people to get away with crimes rather than for them to be falsely accused of crimes, and that's something we inherited from Roman law, but also comes actually from early Catholic versions of canon law and things like that. So that is, but once again, we start with the basics. All human beings have a basic right to life, and then we apply that in sensible ways in every case.
Trent, you are super good at what you do. Really appreciate it. Trent Horn is the author of Why We're Catholic, Persuasive Pro-Life, Answering Atheism, and a whole bunch of other books. You can find them all at shop.catholic.com. Thanks, Trent. Hope we get to see you soon.
I hope so, Si. Thanks.
Coming up next, as we've said, Stephanie Gray Connors. We're going to talk specifically with Stephanie, one of the great pro-life voices in the world today, about in vitro fertilization. Many people are baffled by the church's teaching on in vitro fertilization. If you are, next hour, perfect for you. Right after this on Catholic Answers Live.